That's it from here. Boss around? Okay, let's take a pause.
Pause!
That was a boring gap! Because who can get excited by an ordinary pause, even full of hot drinks? No. A pause filled with a Coke. It's something else. Wait for it. It's the pause that refreshes. Try it now.
Catch the wave. Coke.
Because it's very possible.
Do you ever fantasize about being killed? Do you ever wonder about all the different ways of dying? You know, violently. I wonder, like, what would be the most horrible way to die?
Well, hello, Mr. Fancy.
The following program may contain mature subject matter. Discretion is advised.
So give or take, if I'm doing the math right, I've been gone for 6 months. Because the last episode I released was in October of 2023. It is April of 2024 now. Halloween and April are 6 months apart. They always say in April it's halfway to Halloween. So, give or take, I've been gone for 6 months. And then along came this movie. This week's topic. This movie had its 40th anniversary. And that was enough to resurrect my stinky ass from the dead. Not exactly. But, I mean, yes and no. I was planning on returning to the wide world of podcasting anyway, the WWP, which isn't a thing, but I just created that. Maybe I didn't. I don't know. Somebody else probably said it before, but hey, who knows? Anyways, I was planning on returning. I just couldn't settle on a title to talk about, a movie to review. It was like, I was looking at all these different movies, been watching different things, TV series, video games, all this sort of shit going on, and it was like, but what do I actually want to talk about? What is going to be a big title to bring me back? I mean, there was one that was sort of on the cutting board, but I'm really nervous to review that one. Just because I don't want to fuck it up. But it always, here's the thing I've noticed with past episodes. When I look back on them, it's like, yeah, that's one of my favorite movies. Why did I do such a bad job on the review, though? Like, I always find the movies that I love the most, I screw up the most. I don't know why. Like, my Ghost in the Shell review, that's another one. I actually went back and listened to that because I was kind of curious. I noticed, first off, there was about four different things in that I said that were wrong. And it was like, where the fuck were my notes? Like, what was I doing? Because there's things that I said in it, and it's like, that's not right. Even I know that. Like, why did I say that? But anyways, the Suspiria episode, you guys have heard me 100 times say that I don't like that episode. I leave it up there as sort of a reminder of how not to do an episode. But anyways, so this movie, this week's topic, has its 40th anniversary. And I'm like, okay, I'll be damned if I'm not going to put my stink all over this one. Because this movie, yeah, it took a man in a hockey mask to bring your post-mortem host, your freak without a leash, I don't know, corn, whatever, back from the grave. From the deepest and dankest levels of Studio Zero, you just can't keep a good guy down. So why did I come back? I don't know. But it is with grave unpleasantness that I welcome you back to the depraved hell that is What Lurks Behind Podcast Zero. It's been a long time since I said that. And I'm your host, Postmortem Paul, back from the grave, without a shower, and I'm here to share my shtick, my stink, with all you wonderful, some of you are crazy, but you're all wonderful lurkers, yes. This week, this new beginning, second renaissance of Podcast Zero. Starting with a final chapter. You're like, wait, what? Did he say that right? Yes, I did. Sort of. You know, here. Studios, man. Fuck studios. Fuck Hollywood. But anyways, here's the thing. Because actually, back in the day, 1984, this movie comes out. It probably would have been the perfect ending. But hey, things happen. And we all love this guy in this hockey mask. Well, apparently the studios love the money they make off of him, too. So they released this final chapter. You guys know what movie this is. I don't know why I'm burying the lead. But anyways, they released this movie. It does astronomical in the studios. It's a fan favorite, even though critics hated it. But anyways, and they're like, yeah, you know how we said it was the final one? Yeah, well, try to forget that. You know, because you're the audience. You're stupid. I love how, like studios, Hollywood, whatever. I can't say filmmakers. Filmmakers know their audiences, but the executives, the people, you know, that make the money, and they're like, ooh, they see green, they get more greedy, and they think we're like dumb. They don't understand. We get it. We're consumers. We know what we like. We do like Jason Voorhees, okay? So give us more Friday the 13th. We will go see more Friday the 13th. But actually, see, the thing is that I'm lying to you guys. Because even though this movie's from 1984, the focus this week will be entirely on everyone's favorite hockey masked killer. Because tonight I'm looking back on the career of Toronto Maple Leaf great Doug Gilmore. Or not. Because actually, when I think about it, 1984, he was playing for the St. Louis Blues. He wasn't playing with the Leafs yet. No, I'm just fucking with you. See, the thing is Doug Gilmore. If you're not a hockey fan, you don't know this, so I'm going to explain the joke. I hate doing this, but anyways, Doug Gilmore's nickname was Killer. So when I said everyone's favorite hockey mask killer, okay, you get the joke now. Anyways, this week's episode, yes, I buried the lead long enough on this one. Really just need to get to it, man. Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Also known as part 4, the final chapter. But yeah, I know. Studios were like, here you go, part 4. And you know, honestly, you don't see that very much these days where, you know, a franchise comes out, has a select amount of chapters, and they stop. We should have seen it. It's funny how, like, even today, like, with Scream, people are going, oh my god, Scream 7, why are you doing this? Guys, you can blame Freddy and Jason and Michael for all this crap. Like, they just never knew when to stop. But no, I'm just kidding. But yeah, so this week, yes, after all that, this week, the episode, episode 140, episode CXL. CXL is the Roman numerals for 140, for those of you who didn't know that, which, you guys are smart. I don't have to explain this shit. But first, it's been a while since I've done this. So, a few things. So why the disappearance for 6 months? After last year, it was like a disappearance for 9 months. And you guys are like, is he done? Is he through with this shit? Is he not coming back? I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was actually ready to call it quits, honestly, on podcasting completely, or at least this show. And it was... like, okay, last year I took the 9 month sabbatical, and then when I came back, I was like, okay, let's see if this is what I want to keep on doing. And there was a very lukewarm reception to those two episodes. I mean, and it's difficult these days because social media has made it almost impossible to spread the word of new episodes. Like, Twitter is, or X, or whatever the fuck you call it. I don't know. I got rid of my account. That's gone, by the way. There's no more What Lurks. You know, there's no more Podcast Zero on Twitter or X or whatever the fuck Elon's calling it these days. That's gone. But it was very disheartening, very disenchanting, because I was posting the episodes and nobody was seeing those posts, even on Facebook. I've noticed that I post things, some people see it, most people don't. Instagram has a bit more fluidity to it, or like people see the posts. But again, it's very draining to constantly post about your episodes and try and get people to see that, hey, I put a new episode up, and you go back and you look at like what they call the insights, and it's like 4 people saw this post, and it's like, fuck, why did I waste my time? But anyways, so I kept asking myself, what's the point, you know? And on top of that, even though I'm not one to really expose my personal life very much, or, you know, talk about it very much or whatever, but I had hit a bit of a funk for several months, just dealing with depression, everyday shit I put up with, and health issues and whatnot. There was a whole bunch of just funk surrounding me. So it was like, at the same time, it was very uninspiring. It's like, I don't want to talk to anyone. Just fuck off. You know what I mean? And I'm not that guy. Normally, I'm not that guy. Like, I'm obviously more introverted. I don't do well with others. But I mean, the people that I do like, I like talking to them. You guys are a big part of that. This audience, no matter how big it is, whether there's 12 of you or there's 1,200 of you, it doesn't matter to me. The fact that you're listening, I do like talking. Which is weird, because I'm the quiet one. But I do like to talk. And the thing is, I was probably in a bit, you know, of a worse frame of mind than I even let on to those around me. You know, I did a lot of putting on a mask. Let's stay within the mask theme. But, like, I don't know. So, the show was the least of my worries at that point. It was like, and so I just temporarily disabled the social media accounts, completely killed the Twitter or X or whatever. And that's the thing, too. Some people still call it Twitter. Some people still call it X. I call it Elon's fucking shitty fucking social media app. And that's the thing, too. It angered me. I don't like being angry. Honestly, I really don't. Yeah, I'm a bit of a potty mouth at times, but I don't like it being because I'm angry. And the social media thing was pissing me off. So I was like, ride the storm. Let's see what happens. Let's see if I come back or if I just let the show fade into non-existence. Well, obviously, if you're listening to this, you know what the outcome was, because, yep, I'm back. Come back. You're like, fuck. Why? I'm not sure how long it'll last. But I do have some things that I want to talk about, and I have movies that I want to review. So I still have a reason to keep coming back. And the moods are a little bit better these days, for the most part. And I'm still sort of grumpy at times. But, I mean, not completely. And the thing it sounds weird for me, because my approach to podcasting is just talking. And people call it content creating. Okay, I'm not knocking people. By the way, and that's another thing too. This second wind for the Podcast Zero, I don't want to be as judgmental. It's something that I found myself doing a lot more near the end of the first run. I was really knocking on like influencers and stuff like that, which, I mean, don't get me wrong, they still annoy me. But the thing is that people do what people do. And if that's how people need to put out their creative energy, who am I to shit on them? You know what I mean? So I do this because maybe it entertains people. I don't know. I have horrible opinions of movies. I know that. Most people think the DC movies sucked, and I'm the one that was sitting there I can't say that word. I was loving them. You know what I mean? I thought Man of Steel was great. I thought Batman versus Superman was a lot of fun. You know, Wonder Woman's still probably the best of the bunch. Zack Snyder's Justice League, the really long 4-hour one, that was fucking awesome. And I know there's a lot of people out there that don't like them. And I'm like that rare guy who's like, I love that shit. I have very close friends that think I'm a fucking idiot for liking those movies. And it's like, okay, whatever. I have horrible movie opinions. But if you came back to listen to this, then hey, at least understand that it's just my opinions, and you know, and that's what this is all about. It's I'm resetting the stage a bit. There's moments I was very proud of with this show. There's things that I wasn't proud of. I don't want to ever come off as like that grumpy or pissy fan whining all the time or being a gatekeeper either. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're fans. We react the way we do. I mean, I'll be honest with you. There are certain fandoms that are very toxic and very hard to deal with. But I don't want to be that guy. And I mean, even something like, you know, you take a topic like the remake, the reboot sequel topic that is really prominent these days. I've actually lightened up on that quite a bit over the last year or two. Like, I'm not that guy anymore. And I know that when I first started doing this show back in 2018, I was that guy. I was like, fucking remakes, fucking sequels, stop doing it, and this and that. And it's like, whatever. We live in a world of multiverses now. Like, just let it go. You don't like it, don't watch it. That's just my opinion. But anyway, I just wanted to return to the show more refreshed, more focused on being that welcoming and fun voice for the people to listen to about horror, about science fiction, cyberpunk, just entertainment in general. And I mean, along with this episode, I already have two more lined up, two more ideas already, and they're flowing through my synapses, you know. And I want them to flood yours. So rest assured that for now, the show is back. Okay. Number two, as I just talked about the whole remake, reboot, sequel thing. Yeah, The Matrix is getting a fifth live-action film. And I don't know how I feel about it yet. I'm curious about it. But cautiously curious. Because, like, I know, I was in the minority. I liked Resurrections. But if you remember when I reviewed it way back when, I also did say it was an unnecessary movie. We didn't need it. Had its ups, its downs, I don't know. But again, it wasn't needed. So I'm sitting here wondering, do we really need this fifth movie? I mean, the Wachowskis are not directing this one. It's actually Drew Goddard who did Cabin in the Woods, so I'm okay with that. I like the directing choice. Lana Wachowski, or Wachowski. Is it Wachowski or Wachowski? I'm not sure. Anyways, she will only be involved from an executive producer's role. I'm sure she'll have certain say in there, but this is Drew Goddard's show now, so I'm okay with that at the moment. I will say this, and I think I've said it before on the show. If this is a prequel, give me the second Renaissance, damn it, live action. Or an idea based on it. That's what I want. That's why I was saying about second Renaissance earlier. I'm all about the second Renaissance. In the Animatrix, those two parts, fuck, I loved them. I might be okay with a fifth film if that's what they were doing. I also know who watch what I wish for, right? So there's that idea as well that they're like, yeah, we're basing this on the second Renaissance. And then it looks nothing like it. And I'm like, why? Here's another idea. Do like the Fallout series. Tell a story that's not based on the existing property, but takes place in the existing universe. Maybe that would be something else also. No more Neo. No more Trinity. No more Morpheus. Let them go. Let's do something. We can stay within the Matrix. there's a, I'll put a little asterisk here and I'll say see Animatrix for how to do that right. There were stories in the Animatrix that had nothing to do with Neo, Trinity, or Morpheus and were perfectly fine. So do that. Let's let the Neo story go. It's done. It's been told. Like I said, we really didn't need Resurrections. It was okay, but we didn't need it. So that's sort of my thing on the Matrix getting a fifth film. I do like the idea of Drew Goddard directing. I think he's writing as well. I'm not sure, though. But I'm okay with that. I like that idea. Now, since I brought it up, I might as well ask, how about that Fallout series, guys? Did you all watch that? If you haven't, do I say this? Of course I say it. If you haven't watched it, I am okay if you actually stop listening to the show right now. You can stop it and go watch Fallout. Goddamn. That is how you do a video game adaptation to live action. I think, and I'm going to say this, I think I loved it even more than I did The Last of Us, which was another really good video game to live action adaptation. But Fallout, damn, that was fun. Kudos to the creative team for making one hell of a series. And I got to tip my hat to three names. I mean, there were a lot of people involved in this series and a lot of people that really brought their A game. It was awesome. But I have to tip my hat to three people, and that's Ella Purnell, Aaron Moten, and Walton Goggins. Seriously, they owned this show. There was, like I said, there wasn't a, of all the actors, there's not a bad performance in this show. There's nobody in this show that I was like, yeah, no, you were not good. No. I had no complaints about the acting performers at all. But those three, Ella, Aaron, and Walton, they took the heavy weight of leading the show. They were the leaders. They're your lead actors and actresses and whatnot. They climbed the highest mountains with their performance. It was so much fun to watch. I'm not going to say much right now because I know there's still people who haven't finished watching the first season, which how? I could have binged it in one sitting. It was quite easy. But yeah, there are some who haven't started it yet. What are you waiting for? Like I said, stop the show and go watch Fallout. It's so much better than my show, honestly. But and here's the thing that was really cool, because I'll admit, I did not play the games, okay? I was familiar with the games. I know, you know, all the eggs. I know the Nuka-Cola. I know about Vault-Tec. And I know a lot about Fallout. I just never played the games. I watched others play them. So, but the thing is that if you've never played the games, you have no knowledge of Fallout, don't worry about it. Like, you will still enjoy this show. If you have played the games, or you were like me and watched others play them and you know about the stuff, well, have fun enjoying all the nods, moments, and environments that will make you feel like you're right in the middle of the fucking game. Because it seriously felt like what we've seen in the games felt like it was put on TV in a live-action format that I don't have to control or watch someone else control the game. I just watched the show. It was so well done. That's all I'll say for now. I'm probably going to talk about it in coming episodes. Plus, I know Ben, his Wilhelm podcast, I believe they are doing a Fallout episode as well. So you guys can always go check that out. See Ben, I plug you when I can. I like to help guy out. But yeah. Finally, and yes, I'm well aware that this opening intro is quite long. This week's episode might be a little bit longer just because I've been away for a while, so I have a lot to say. But just so you guys know, future episodes will probably not be as long. That's one thing with coming back to the show. I do want to try and make them a bit shorter. This week's is a little bit longer. It has reasons to be, especially with this final thing that I'm going to be talking about. because for those of us who were fans of this show, 9 fucking years this show enlightened us, made us laugh. Very rarely, but at moments, it got emotional, made us cry. Say You Love Satan, an 80s horror podcast, has come to an end. It's one of the greatest podcasts on the streaming webs. I don't know if I've ever actually told the story. I know I've mentioned them on this show before. I discovered them. They had been around, I want to say it was about 6 to 8 months before I discovered the show. I found them. I was searching up horror podcasts, and I remember their show came up. It was one of the first ones. Them and Nightmare on Film Street are always like the two first shows that always pop up when you're looking for horror podcasts. So yeah, I had discovered them. Trying to remember what the first actual episode was I listened to. It was either Monster Squad or Lost Boys. It was one or the other. And then, of course, episode 18, Return of the Living Dead, was probably, and still is to this day, my favorite episode they ever released. By that point, John had finally joined the show as a regular. It's interesting because this past week I went all the way back to episode 1 of their show. They had reviewed Trick or Treat from 1986. And it's just Steph, Jess, and Melissa. And it was like, it felt so weird listening to it because it was like, man, like they've had many guests on the show throughout the years. And John became a regular. Benny became a regular. And it was like, fuck, like their show grew. And the thing is like they were, in my opinion, they were one of the best podcasts, not only on the internet, but of the horror genre. I think because they made it so much fun. They were one of the reasons why I was inspired to start Podcast Zero. I didn't have a cool name like theirs. Say You Love Satan, it just rolls off your tongue. It's such a great name. And not that, I mean, Podcast Zero is kind of a cool name. What lurks behind Podcast Zero? I mean, I'm not going to lie. I sort of stole it from a Rob Zombie song. Anyone that knows Rob Zombie's music, it sounds familiar to a certain song title. Yeah, I know. That's where I stole it from. I'm not going to lie. But I always loved their name. But the cool thing was they were very sociable, especially on Instagram, which is how I got to know all of them. We're not best friends or anything like that, but I mean, like I do know of them. I've talked with them. I follow their accounts. I think they're some of the funniest and coolest people that ever podcasted or ever existed, you know, which, yeah, like, again, here's me, who's normally Mr. Antisocial Introvert, saying there are some cool people out there, and their show, they had 5, 6, 7, 8 of them. There, like I said, there were other people that always joined every now and then and whatnot, but the show ended with the 5 of them, I believe. They've announced there will be one more episode, but April 14th, 2024, here we are celebrating the 40th anniversary of Friday the 13th, the final chapter, and that's when we found out that Say You Love Satan was coming to their final chapter. So it was an end of an era. It's a bittersweet thing. 9 great years of memories and laughs, inspiration for me to podcast about horror movies. And yeah, but I mean, let's be honest, even myself, you heard me talking earlier, I was contemplating leaving podcasting. I get it. All the best things must come to an end. I'm not including my show in that, but the thing is that I get it. I do understand where they're coming from. All the best things have to come to an end. You know what I mean? So, I wish them nothing but the best, you know? They're a lot of fun, and I'm glad they will continue to be on Instagram. because, you know, I like he, and here's the thing with Say You Love Satan. What I always loved about their show was they were animal people. They loved pets. All of them. They all had pets. They all loved their pets. They lived for their pets. Their pets were part of the show. And that's something that I always related to. It's kind of funny because as my show is What Lurks Behind Podcast Zero, I have a dog named Zero, which will be weird when he's gone. I will probably disappear for a few months. And because it'll be like, I don't think I'm going to be able to say Podcast Zero after he's gone. But I'm not going to think about that right now. He's still around and still lovable and huggable. But yeah, Say You Love Satan. Obviously people that aren't in the know are going to sit there and go, oh, Satan, it's a satanic show. It's horrible. It's bad. No, these were good people. They were caring. They were loving. And they were, like I said, they were animal people. So I absolutely related to that. So yeah, this show, it will be dearly missed. I mean, the only way I can say it is rest in pieces, Say You Love Satan. But it's cool. As a fan, as a podcaster, as just someone who enjoyed everything they did, I do get why they called it quits. So it is what it is. I just wanted to actually give a nod to it because they were a huge inspiration for me. Like, I remember listening to those first few episodes, you know, Trick or Treat, Brain Damage, Monster Squad, Pet Sematary. And I would listen to them just talk about movies and movies they loved and they knew so well. And it was like, yeah, like, the horror genre is so much fun. Yeah, I know people will be like, oh, it glorifies killing. No, and yes and no. I mean, the killing is just I don't even know how to explain it. It's like you watch a slasher film, the killing's there. It's just to keep the movie going on. But there's the other stuff that goes on and, you know, and I don't know. Anyways, this is going to end up going on another tangent. It's going to be another 20 minutes long, and we need to move on. So, on that note, let's turn another page to another final chapter, or so they said it would be. Yeah, the trailer timeout. Let's do this. When we return, we're going to do the trailer timeout. And then when we return, keep in mind, it's been 40 years since Corey Feldz took on Mr. Voorhees. 40 years since we met the Jarvis family. 40 years since Teddy called Jimmy a dead fuck. And then 40 years since Jimmy showed Teddy when he, you know, laid out some of the best goddamn dance moves of the 80s and got himself a piece of a double mint twin. Yeah, 40 years though. Back in the splat, kids.
Three times before, you have felt the terror, known the madness, lived the horror. But this is the one you've been screaming for. Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Jason is back. He moves like a shadow, dark and silent.
Sorry, you change your mind?
He never utters a word. He doesn't even seem to breathe.
Where the hell's the corkscrew?
He simply, mindlessly, mercilessly, kills. But now, Jason's reign of terror is over. Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Friday, April 13th, is Jason's unlucky day.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to the show. And oi, I screwed up something. So, I mentioned earlier that Say You Love Satan had announced on April 14th they were calling it quits. And I said it was on the same day that Friday the 13th was celebrating its 40th anniversary. No. I got that. I don't know where I get that. I actually think I thought that was clever, but it actually really wasn't. Because Friday the 13th, the final chapter, it celebrated its 40th anniversary on April 13th, not 14th. So anyway, whatever. It is what it is. With that said, Friday the 13th, part 4, the final chapter. Sometimes people say part 4, some people don't. It doesn't really matter, whatever. The movie was released April 13th, 1984. Duh. How many times? I think I've referenced the fact that it's its 40th anniversary, like, enough times that you, by now you've all done the math and you're like, no. Okay. On to the things you might not know. Directed by Joseph Zito. He also did the movie The Prowler, in which Tom Savini did special effects for that one as well. He also did a Chuck Norris movie, Missing in Action. He directed Dolph Lundgren in Red Scorpion. So interestingly enough, if IMDb is like, let's say it's your go-to, you know, for how do people rate things in the world, you know? Anyways, Zito's done 10 films. Of those 10 on IMDb, this one is the one he has the highest rating for. I'll talk about the rating later, but The Prowler, Missing in Action, Red Scorpion, he did Invasion in USA, that was another one. This one's his highest rated film, according to IMDb. So that was kind of funny. I'm okay with it. I'm not knocking it. It just struck me funny. I was like, damn, a Friday the 13th movie is Joseph Zito's best film, according to IMDb. Interesting. The movie was written by, screenplay by, Barney Cohen, who was also the writer. Get this, he worked on He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, the cartoon, Thundercats, Forever Knight, and Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And technically, he wasn't even supposed to be the writer for this movie. The movie, the producers approached Zito, and they wanted him to do the writing and directing. He didn't feel he could write the movie well. He was like, no, I'm not a writer. And they're like, here's an offer you can't refuse, a.k.a. a lot of money. So what he did was he took some of that money, and he paid Barney to secretly write the screenplay. And he would have meetings with, like, the producers and different creative minds, and like Zito would. And then he would go back and he would tell Barney, yeah, they came up with this idea and that idea, and he would incorporate it in the screenplay. So Barney Cohen's the one who actually wrote the movie, even though Joseph Zito was the one hired to write it. It's kind of interesting. Obviously, for those of you who know, Friday the 13th, any of these movies are based on characters created by Victor Miller, along with Ron Kurtz, Martin Kittrauser, I think I'm saying his last name right, and Carol Watson, and of course, Sean S. Cunningham, although he wasn't credited in this movie, which is probably why there's all these fucking legal battles over Friday the 13th. We're never getting another movie, kids. I'm sorry. As much as I want it, I don't think it's happening. We're getting that Crystal Lake series eventually on Peacock, but I don't know, man. I get depressed. I know there's always this lingering hope, and every now and then on social media, they'll tease it. They'll be like, yeah, more Friday the 13th coming, or keep your eyes open, or ki-ki-ki, ma-ma-ma, and you're like, oh my God, and then nothing happens, and it's like, fuck. Friday the 13th movies, we may never get another one, guys. It's a sad, sad thing. Well, actually, no, it's not, because some of the fan movies have been pretty good. The Never Hike Alone series, they're all right. I don't mind them. I'll watch them. You know, I mean, they're not these, but they're good enough. And they keep getting Tom Matthews to come back as Tommy Jarvis. So I'm okay. Paramount, man, damn it. Get your shit together. Tell Victor and Sean to stop fighting. Anyway, enough of that. This movie was produced by Frank Mancuso Jr. Frank was a producer for Friday the 13th parts 2 through 6. He also did the TV series, Friday the 13th, the TV series. He was a producer on Body Parts, Species 2, Species 3, Ronin, and Stigmata. The music that you're hearing right now, composed by Harry Manfredini. I always say Manfredini, and it's like there's no N there. Anyways, he is Friday the 13th. He's probably one of the most consistent parts of Friday the 13th, with the exception of, like, I think, is it three of the movies he hasn't done? I know he didn't do Part 8. Part 8 was Fred Mullen. I don't remember that one. But anyways, you mention Harry's name to any person in the horror fandom, you go Harry Manfredini, and people are like, Friday the 13th. It's just what we think. I mean, he was also the composer for movies like House or Deep Star 6 or The Omega Man, but most people think Friday the 13th. They hear the... I know, everyone always does the ch-ch-ch, which technically, I mean, yes, I understand it. I know what he was trying to do, so now I actually, and I'm not going to lie, I do actually hear the ki-ki-ki-ma-ma-ma thing, but you really have to listen closely, and so I get it. Most people are going to go, ch-ch-ch, yeah, you know what, I'm not knocking you for it, but he gave us that. So, like I said, you mention Harry's name, most people will tell you Friday the 13th. Special effects by Tom Savini. And here's the thing about Tom. Okay, so I've talked about Tom several times on this show. I'm not going through it all over again. I mean, and let's be fair here. I mean, if you know horror, you know the horror genre, you know special effects artists, even the least amount of information that you probably know. You know the name Savini, you know Tom Savini, you know... You've heard the name. You know the name. And odds are you've seen a movie that he's worked on. He's worked on hundreds of them. At first I was starting my notes and I was like, here we go again. And I'm like, nah, fuck that. You guys know who he is. Also, hint, hint. I'll be talking about him yet again in a couple weeks. Hint, hint. So, yeah. One of those planned episodes. Yeah, that I'm talking about. You'll hear his name again. So I'll be talking about him now. But anyways, you know the name. I just have to mention it because the kill scenes in this movie, you can tell he's got his hand in all those special effects. It's definitely his handiwork we're seeing. But now it's on to our starring cast. There's a lot of names, so I'm going to try to do this as fast as possible. But pretty much every name that's mentioned here has some integral part of... They're important in some way or another. This is one of those rare Friday the 13th movies where, like, the cast, even some of them that seem like they're just, like, Jason fodder, they still had character, so they were worth mentioning. So it's like, there's a lot of names here. But we'll start with our final girl, Kimberly Beck. She plays Trish Jarvis. She is Tommy's sister, sort of. It's interesting. This is a movie that, even though it has a final girl, it also has a final boy. It's very interesting, this movie. But yes, she was primarily a TV actress, though. Kimberly was. She had a small role in Independence Day, the alien movie with Will Smith fighting all the bad guys. I'm Will Smith. I'm with Jeff Goldblum. Jeff Goldblum's amazing. Will Smith, on the other hand, I'm fighting the bad guys. In a movie about an alien invasion, it feels like it's a Disney movie because everything just lines up so beautifully and perfectly. But we love Independence Day. And I'm not going to lie, the special effects are really fucking cool in that movie. But as the years have gone on, I go back and I rewatch that movie and I'm just like, it's fun, yeah, but it's very safe. It's a very safe movie. Will Smith comes to save the day. Boom, pow, biff. No, he's not Batman. But, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, you get my point. She had a small role in that. I think her credit was housewife. It's like, couldn't even give her a name. Like, Jesus. Independence Day. Everyone tells me how it's the best president speech ever. Okay, I love Bill Pullman as much as the next guy. But that is not the best speech I've ever heard. It's a good one. I'm not taking away from it. Just saying it's not the best. What is the best? I don't fucking know. I couldn't tell you. I don't like politicians. So when politicians speak in movies or in real life, it's like, shut up. That's me. Anyways, on to Tommy Jarvis, played by Corey Feldman. Gee, I don't know who Corey is. I have no clue who this Corey Feldman is. Do you know who he is? I mean, he was in movies like The Lost Boys. Do we know this movie? Goonies? Goonies. Why does it sound familiar? The Burbs? Gremlins? Gremlins? I know Gremlins. I think I talked about it in my very first episode back in 2018 with my sister. It was weird. Stand By Me. That's a movie that came up. I think I've seen it. I think I know. License to Drive. That's a funny one. I like that movie. He was the voice of, that turtle, the ninja turtle guy. The kicking and fighting turtle named Donatello. He was in that 1990 movie for it was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's it, yeah. We don't know who this Corey kid is, though, man. Like, shit. Corey Feldman. Sounds familiar. Yeah, he's Tommy. I totally played that up, but it's like, look, I mean, back in 1984, Corey Feldman wasn't a household name. You jump ahead 40 years. There are 6-year-olds that know who Corey Feldman is, and we're talking 6 years old in 2024. So it's a name. You just know it. And I'm probably wrong about the 6-year-old thing, but he's a famous name. Moving on to Eric Anderson as Rob. Rob was the, he's like the camper that seems like he knows a little too much. Well, obviously he was on the hunt for Jason, but, aside from this movie, he was another TV actor. He had roles on X-Files, House, Outer Limits, Ghost Whisperer. That's the name of a few, but I mean, like, he was mainly a TV actor. Barbara Howard, she plays Sarah. She was actually a regular on the TV series Falcon Crest that ran from 1985 through to 1986. I will admit I never watched it, but I remember seeing commercials for it as a kid when it would be on TV. I think my mom watched it. I might be wrong about that, but I've never actually watched the show. I know it's easily accessible all over the internet, but just never watched it. Moving on to Doug. Doug was played by Peter Barton. Peter Barton was a huge soap opera star in The Young and the Restless. He was also on some TV series called Sunset Beach, which, again, know the name, never watched the show. But horror fans probably know Peter best from Hell Night, the movie he did with Linda Blair in, was it 1981? I believe it was 81 that one came out. Moving on to, here we go. Let's get some dance moves going on with our man Crispin Glover. He was Jimmy. Yeah, he did this movie. And a year later, you know who he was? You know who he was? I know you know who he was. He was George fucking McFly in Back to the Future. That's a nice start, honestly, for his career. Nice start, Crispin. You go from a Friday the 13th character with some of the best fucking dance moves ever. Yeah. And then the following year, he's George McFly in what might be one of the greatest time travel movies of all time. And there's a lot wrong with that movie, but we love it too much to give a shit. And then, years later, he plays Andy Warhol. Yes, Crispin was Andy Warhol in the Oliver Stone film, The Doors. And 2 years later, he was the title character in the Glenn Morgan flick of Willard, Willard's a good one. If you've ever seen Willard, Willard's good. He was good in that too. I mean, that, and those are just a few movies from his resume, but I mean, like, those are some fucking bangers. George McFly. Yeah. But he did this a year before that. So he wasn't even George McFly yet. That's kind of cool. Alan Hayes plays Paul. Not me. He plays another Paul. He was also in Neon Maniacs from 1986, which is part of that like rock and roll horror thing. If I remember correctly, it's been years since I've seen Neon Maniacs, so I could be wrong, but it seems to me it came out like around the same time as like Trick or Treat and Rocktober Blood and those kinds of movies. And it was sort of in the same vein as that. Move on to Mrs. Jarvis. She was played by Joan Freeman. She started acting way back in the early 1950s. So this movie was actually one of the last roles she would be in. I think she had like 4 TV appearances after this, and then she retired from acting. So this was one of her last roles, actually. She's pretty cool. Sort of underused in this movie. But I mean, honestly, you're more focused on Tommy and Trish, so I kind of get that the mother was sort of underused. Not to mention, how many slasher films do you know where the parents are a big part of the story? They really aren't, unless it's like Betsy Palmer in Friday the 13th Part 1, but or Part 5, you know, Roy being the killer and all. Oh, did I spoil that for you? Moving on to Judy Aronson as Samantha. So in 1984, she was in this. In 1985, she was in Weird Science and American Ninja. And then she did a lot of TV work after. But Friday the 13th, Part 4, Weird Science and American Ninja. Girl's got 80s written all over her. Like, fuck, that's awesome. And then in 2001, she did have a small role in the movie Hannibal. She was a reporter. But a lot of TV work. A lot of TV work. And then we have Camilla and Carrie Moore as Tina and Terry. So, they play the twins. You have Camilla. Camilla would go on to act in the 1990 DJ Webster flick, The Dark Side of the Moon, with Robert Sampson and Joe Turkel. I mention this only because Turkel, he was Lloyd the Barber. Bartender. Why did I say barber? Fuck. He was Lloyd the bartender in The Shining. He was the bartender that Jack keeps talking to. And then he also would play Eldon Tyrell in Blade Runner. He was not a barber, though. I don't know why I said that. What the fuck? I should have just said left it at Lloyd, but I wanted, you know, for those who might have been like, whoa, what character was that in The Shining? He was the bartender. Yeah. But anyways, not a barber. Now, Carrie, who plays... Here's the funny thing. Camilla plays Tina. Carrie plays Terry. Carrie's name probably was not very hard to remember in this movie because it rhymed. She would have a role in the Jim Carrey vampire comedy Once Bitten. Carrie would be in a Carrie movie. It's weird. This is almost a tongue twister that I didn't intend on. But yeah, that movie Once Bitten from 1985. And then she was in Days of Our Lives. I want to say it was like 15 to 20 episodes or something, if I remember reading that correctly. But yeah, I call them the Doublemint Twins. They weren't the actual Doublemint Twins. And I'm aging myself when I say that. But yeah, that's what I called them in this movie. Lawrence Monason as Teddy the horny freak, calls Jimmy a dead fuck. He was also in the 1985 movie Mask, and he did a lot of TV work. He's a freak in this movie, though. He's kind of annoying. He might be the only character that I thought was sort of, like, annoying, but at the same time, still didn't bother me that he was in this movie, so whatever. I got just a few more guys, and these are actually minor roles, but they're worth mentioning. Bruce Mahler as Axel. He's the hospital attendant trying to get his freak on. He's a bit of a perv. But he was Doug Fackler in the Police Academy movies. Stop. That's all you need to know right there. He was fucking Fackler in the Police Academy movies. If you've seen the Police Academy movies, you know who I'm talking about. Yeah. That's all you need to know. He did other stuff. Who cares? He was Fackler. Even when I watch Friday the 13th Part 4, I always say, oh, there's Fackler. His name's Axel in the movie, but I don't care. Lisa Freeman, she's the nurse that he's out to get. I bring her up because she was Babs in Back to the Future and in Back to the Future Part 2. And she was also in Mr. Mom with Michael Keaton, and she was in Savage Streets with Linda Blair. But because I brought up Back to the Future earlier, I bring her up now. So she was that. And finally, no, not finally. I forgot. I got one. I left one for the very end. You already know what I'm talking about. But anyways, Bonnie Hellman is the hitchhiker. She was the one who had the sign that said Canada and Love. I only bring her up because of that sign that say Canada and Love. I'm like, yeah, thank you for remembering my home country. She was probably trying to dodge some draft or something. Who knows? I don't know. Whatever. She was in this movie. She did a ton of TV work, though. Finally. Yeah. So who's the one character I haven't talked about yet? Jason Voorhees. Yeah. Played by Ted White. And you know what's the weird thing? He's uncredited in this movie. How? How do you not credit Jason Voorhees? I don't get it. But yeah. He plays a hell of a Jason, by the way. I might add. I talk about that later. But anyways, he also had roles in Major League, The Hidden, John Carpenter's Starman, and Romancing the Stone. Romancing the Stone is a movie that, okay, I'm not going to lie. There will be episodes that will come up in the future that you're probably going to be like, they're not horror, dude. Why are you talking about them? Because I want to. Romancing the Stone is one of those movies. It will have its episode. It's not a horror movie. There's a few elements that are kind of like creepy and scary and whatnot, but it's not a horror movie. I don't care. I will eventually talk about that movie because I want to. So, and that's another thing with this quote unquote second renaissance of Podcast Zero. There will be times where there'll be episodes that won't be horror and they won't be science fiction. They might even be action movies just because I want to talk about them. So just be forewarned, because I mentioned Romancing the Stone and that will be an episode. It's not one of the next two, but it will be an episode. So just letting you know. Finally, we're going to get on to the synopsis of this movie. And then we will move on. Oh, by the way, it's rated R. And the runtime, I believe, is 92 minutes. I forgot to write that stuff down, but I already know it. So I was like, I'm not writing down stuff I already fucking know. I actually know the synopsis of this movie, but I wrote this down because it came off the back of the VHS box. So it goes like this. The body count continues in this vivid thriller, the fourth, but not final, story in the widely successful Friday the 13th series. Jason, Crystal Lake's least popular citizen, returns to wreak further havoc in Friday the 13th, the final chapter. After his revival in a hospital morgue, the hockey-masked murderer fixes his vengeful attention on the Jarvis family and a group of hitherto carefree teenagers. Young Tommy Jarvis is an aficionado of horror films with a special talent for masks and makeup. Has the diabolical Jason finally met his match? Well, here's the thing. Yeah, it actually seems Jason has met his match. Especially since Tommy has become this recurring character. He was a recurring character in the next two installments of Friday the 13th, Part 5 and Part 6. Part 5, yeah. His character was hard to deal with in Part 5. But then Part 6, they totally redeemed him with Tom Matthews. So that it worked. But part 5, New Beginning. His part of the story was... anyway, but whatever. He's also shown up in the Never Hike Alone series of films. Tommy has. And he was in that crowdfunded, now defunct, video game that came out. I mean, like that, and that's the thing. Fans love Tommy Jarvis. What's not to love, though? Honestly, okay, first off, Corey Feldman might have been one of the first child actors. I know he wasn't, but for my era of growing up, one of the first few that was not annoying at all in this movie. At no point in this movie am I like, oh, an annoying child actor. No, he's solid through the whole film. On top of that, whether you watch this as a kid, whether you watch it as an adult, whatever, horror fans can relate to Tommy, especially in this movie. Why? The masks. The love of horror. Many of us want to do something within the genre, whether it be creating something or collecting something or both. Like I said, I heard the Say You Love Satan podcast years ago, and I was like, I want to do that. And why? Because I love horror. And Tommy's character loves horror, so he creates masks. And it's like, yeah, I relate to that. I want to create something within the horror genre. I'm not good at movies. I'm not good at video stuff. Hell, I've been tampering with the idea of doing video for this podcast, and I'm still afraid to get in front of a camera. So it's like, I know I won't do that, but I can talk about movies. I can put that out there. So yes, that's the thing. The love of special effects. Many of us horror fans, we love practical effects. We love creating special effects. Again, something I'm not good at, so I do this podcast. But we love good special effects. Tommy loves special effects. Tommy is us. Tommy is the character that fights the demon, fights the bad guy, while using his talents and his passions to win the day. For some of us, that's something we can relate to. Maybe we're not fighting a Jason Voorhees, but we have our own other demon we're fighting, and we try to use our talents and our passions to get us through. You see what I'm saying? Thematically, Tommy Jarvis is almost every horror movie fan in one way or another. Maybe you're not fighting a demon, but you want to create something. Maybe you're not good at creating something, but you want to collect something. I'm sort of in the middle of both worlds for that one. Plus, dealing with the idea of fighting demons is something that it's like, how do I get past certain things? Well, I create or I collect, and that's Tommy. Tommy Jarvis is us. He's many of us. He is someone we can relate to. And that's another point with this movie. Yes, this movie has its Jason fodder. Character simply there to die. Yep. For Jason Eureka's Havoc on. But also, some of these characters we actually like. Or we laugh at. Or we think, Teddy, you're a fucking creep. Because he really is. Him and Axel are two fucking creeps. They're creepy dudes. But the thing is the characters are done well in this. They're memorable. I mean, okay, like I said, I always call Axel Backler because of the Police Academy movies, but I do know his name is Axel in this movie. I do remember him. Tommy, Trish, Teddy, the twins. That's a lot of T's, first off. But secondly, they're memorable. The twins, as I call them, the Doubleman twins. Which, like I said earlier, I'm dating myself. If you know, you know. It's one of those things. The, what is it? The IYUKY or whatever. No, if you know, you know. Whatever. You get my point. The thing is it's one of those things, right? The double mint commercials. The gum commercials. Yeah. I know, I just aged myself. But anyways, there's that. I always refer to the two girls as them. But they weren't actually in real life. They weren't the real girls from those commercials. But characters. Characters in this movie. That's what I'm sort of focusing on right now. We remember the names. We remember the things about them. And then there's Jimmy. And that dance. And okay, so within Friday the 13th, part 5, the next movie in the series. Yeah, we know there's Violet. And she tries to give Jimmy a run for his money, but nothing is going to top those killer moves. Crispin Glover. And here's the thing. So when, and I always crack this joke whenever that scene pops up. When I was watching the Blu-ray yesterday, because I was watching it to prepare for this episode and whatnot, and sure as shit, he puts the record on the turntable, He starts his dance and out of my mouth right away. Move over, Travolta. You got nothing on Crispin. And I say that almost every time I watch this movie. The dance is ridiculous. It is fucking ridiculous. But we love it. It's so freaking memorable. And the song being played during that dance is a song by the band Lion. The song's called Love is a Lie. But during the actual filming, it's been said that he was dancing to Back in Black by AC/DC. Now, more than likely, that's true. More than likely, it's also some form of a copyright legal issue thing why the song was changed. Social media. So here's a funny story for you. I don't know how many of you use like Instagram and then have Instagram post to your Facebook. If you do that, I don't know. Sometimes like I like doing the stories thing a lot. I think I like the stories because honestly, people don't have to have it in their feed. You have to click on those to see them. So if somebody really wants to see what I'm posting, they'll click on my stories. But if I post it in a feed, then you're sort of forced to see it. And some people don't want to see all the shit I post. So it's like I do the stories thing a lot. Anyways, I'll post like a picture and then like you can add music to it, right? Now, keep in mind, Instagram, Facebook, both owned by Meta. I'll post a picture in my stories and I'll add music to it. And I'll have that it shares it to Facebook as well in their stories. They're both owned by the same. And the funny thing is Instagram, it'll be fine. Nothing happens. Facebook, all of a sudden I'm getting emails and notifications. Copyright violation. For what? For using this song. I used it off your fucking app. What? Why am I being, like, why are you nailing me for copyrights when I used your fucking app? Anyway, whatever. It is what it is. It's just, When I found out, like, and this was a couple of years back, I found this out, that Back in Black was the song that was supposedly being used during those dance scenes. And it's like, I don't think the band would have minded if their music was, like, attached to one of the most famous horror franchises of all time. I mean, later on, AC/DC would go on to do the Maximum Overdrive soundtrack. So it's not like they had anything against horror movies. So it's got to be some stupid copyright legal thing why they couldn't use the song. Or maybe it's just the producers didn't want to pay for the rights to the music. Who knows? That being said, the song that was played is Love is a Lie by a band called Lion. Not White Lion, but Lion. And I don't really care. It doesn't matter what the song is. It's the fucking dance. Well, chef's kiss, because it's so ridiculously fun. And then you have, okay, so you got a great cast. You got great dance moves. There's two other factors that really stand out in this movie. And they go hand in hand. They are the kill scenes and the Jason. So you got the kills. The kill scenes. The blood, the gore. The effects by Tom Savini. He's a king. He's one of the greats in his field. You definitely know it's Tom Savini's work in this movie, especially if you've been watching movies for quite a long time. You can usually tell. I see a lot of he did the effects in part one, and you see some of those similar effects used here, just in different ways, different forms, whatnot. The kills in this movie are awesome. I will say it over and over again, though. My favorite Jason kill of all time is definitely the sleeping bag kill in part 7. Simply because I don't think I've ever laughed as hard as I did for that kill in any of the Friday the 13th movies. That and my ribs were hurting so bad after that one from laughing so hard. But with that being said, the kills in this one are good. There's some good ones. The hacksaw kill, that's awesome. The corkscrew. Where the hell is my corkscrew? It's in your hand, fucker. And then the way they chop Jimmy's face after, which you watch the behind the scenes stuff, it's actually filmed backwards. They take the blade away from his face. It's kind of cool. I probably just spoiled some of the magic of Tom Savini, but I mean, it's on the Blu-ray. It's not like you wouldn't have seen it or known it. But that whole sequence, Jimmy's death is awesome. poor Crispin. I mean, and the thing is from what I heard, apparently he was really excited to do that. So that's awesome. But I mean, Jimmy was such a lovable character in Corkscrew and Blade to Face. And yeah, he's dud. Tina's death when Jason throws her out the window and she lands on the car. This is after she realizes her sister actually never really left. Because her sister was like, I'm leaving. And then all of a sudden she sees her sister's bike is outside. And it's like, wait, what's going on? And then Jason finds her and throws her out the window. And she lands on the car. That's a nice death scene too. And then let's not forget, there's some carnage inflicted on Jason as well. I mean, the hand scene when he cuts like in between the fingers and half his hand is cut off, and it will not cut off, it's like just split apart. It's like, that's a particular favorite of mine, actually. I love that scene, you know. So Jason didn't just do all the dishing out of the, like, you know, of all the violence. He got a little bit of himself. He gets his ass kicked a bit. And I mean, speaking of Jason, Ted White, uncredited, disgusting, what a gem. God, the man's a gem. I admit, I am that Kane Hodder guy. I love Kane Hodder as Jason, but Ted White is a very close second for me. God, I love his performance. And the funny thing about that is apparently he wasn't much of a fan of playing Jason. I guess he didn't like the role. Here's the thing about that, though. If you think about it, okay, so he didn't... Maybe he wasn't a fan of playing Jason. Maybe he was... Maybe it came after, I don't know. But I'm led to believe from what I was... Sort of things I was reading and whatnot, that he didn't like playing the role. Now, here's the thing. Maybe it's that disgust or hatred or anger that helped fuel his performance. Because, I don't know, I wasn't on the set. But I sure as hell love his performance. Jason seems pissed off. And I love it. He's determined to kill these fucking kids. And Ted just does such a great job playing that up. And you gotta remember, with the Jason Voorhees role, there is no dialogue. He don't speak. So everything has to be emoted off of presence and posture and how his walk is determined and stuff like, and Ted does such a great job with it. I admit, yes, I'm a Kane Hodder guy. I think Kane did some of the greatest Jason work there was, but Ted is, oh, he's a fucking close second. And again, I gotta roll back to it one more time about Tom Savini and his work, because there's the moment the mask comes off. We don't see Ted's face. No, we see some fucking killer, hideous and gorgeous, like, makeup work. That's Tom Savini again. And then there's, you know, the scene with the machete in Jason's face, and then his face is sort of sliding down it and it's being cut and whatever. That's right before the moment when Tommy goes all die motherfucker die on Jason. But I mean, that shot is awesome. Even for a slasher flick. You know, that's a fucking nice shot. You don't see that in every movie these days. You don't see it in many movies, regardless of genre, you know. So, yeah. To Ted, to Tom, two masters of their craft at doing their best work in this movie. And I mean, there's things, as much as I rave about this movie, I could nitpick a little bit. I mean, there was deleted footage of the aftermath of Jason's carnage, like sort of like the morning after kind of thing, showing all the kids killed, all the victims laying around and whatnot. And I guess it was the director's choice to keep that out of the movie. Kind of wish they would have kept it in, because it would have been kind of cool. It's interesting. The original Halloween, at the very end, one thing I always loved about the movie, and maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's just something stupid with me. I don't know. But I always loved at the end of Halloween, Michael's fallen out the window. He's dead. Or supposedly. He was supposed to be dead. Whatever. And then the music starts to play and is haunting again. And they go through the different rooms, just showing what the rooms were left like after Michael's carnage in the house. No dead bodies or anything like that, but you just see the rooms all aflutter and whatnot. I would have liked to have seen them do that with this movie, especially since at the time this was supposed to be the final Friday. So it would have been kind of cool to just see room to room all the carnage and whatnot. But I mean, it is what it is. You can see the footage. It's in the extras on the Scream Factory Blu-ray. Which also, the Blu-ray has a lot of cool behind-the-scenes footage of the special effects, some cool deleted scenes and whatnot. But that might be my one and only gripe with this movie, is once I found out about that footage, I was like, damn you for taking that out. You should have left it in. But overall, for me, like, this movie is one of the reasons I love the 80s decade for horror movies. I mean, it's just, it was a fun time in movies. You know, not everything had to be so deep and heavy. There were deep and heavy movies coming out, don't get me wrong. But this was just one of those where it's like, just sit back and have fun. Just have a laugh, you know. There are, and hey, as much as I rave about this movie, there are some out there who don't care for this one. Some who, you know, feel the later Jason movies, primarily 6 and 7, get a lot of love. But people, there's some people that think the later Jason movies were better. There's some who feel that this was just another run-of-the-mill slasher. They're entitled to their opinions. I get it. It's okay to be wrong. Just kidding, guys. In case you're one of them out there that's like, you know, part 4 just didn't work for me. You're free to your opinions, man. That's the thing about movies. We have opinions, whatever. It's when you get toxic with your opinions, that's when I have a problem with it. But, I mean, if people don't like this movie, they don't like this movie. It's kind of interesting, though, because, as I said earlier, this is Joseph Zito's most highest-ranked movie on IMDb. It has a 6 out of 10 rating on IMDb. That's not bad. That's solid for a slasher flick, because a lot of slashers do not get past the 5, 5.5 mark, unless you're, you know, you're Halloween or Nightmare on Elm Street or something big. A lot of them don't get up to 6, you know? But then again, if you ask critics at the time when this movie came out, they hated it, despite fans loving it. Friday the 13th fans were all about this movie, where there were critics and whatnot. Gene Siskel, fuck, I gotta bring up his comment. He had me rolling. I was in stitches when I was reading different reviews. I didn't write a lot down for the reviews. I mean, Rotten Tomatoes has this at 24% failure rating. Metacritic, 33 out of 100. So I was like, I don't care what critics said. But Gene Siskel, he was calling the movie an immoral and reprehensible piece of trash. And I was like, you know, some people would call that a compliment. it's like, I was dying when I read that. I was like, that's fucking funny. Siskel hated slashers. He hated horror movies. I don't know why he ever ranked them. Why rate them? Why even watch them? You know you hate them. Like, I don't know. Podcast 0 rating. What's my rating? How do I approach this movie? I approach it that I know how to approach these things. I know what it is. I don't go into a Friday the 13th movie expecting to have some moral story, like, you know, or the best acting I've seen since Dazed and Confused. I'm sure me saying that has many of you dazed and confused right now. Just go with it. Leave it be. Be with what I just said, okay? Seriously, Dazed and Confused has some great fucking acting in it. I'm not lying. Maybe you disagree, but just go with it. But seriously, though, in regards to Friday the 13th, the final chapter, I want a fast-paced, goofy, horny, stupid, blood-filled B-movie when I watch any of the Friday the 13ths, for that matter. But when I watch this one, and that's what I get. I get exactly that. Teenage me, when I saw this as a teenager for the first time, I loved all the skin that was shown in this movie. I'm not going to lie. You have to keep, and that's the thing, you have to keep in mind the target audience for this movie. It wasn't meant to appease fans of Ben-Hur or Casablanca. You're not going to impress people who, well, I mean, they might like this movie, but if someone's favorite movie is Gone with the Wind, I'm sure they don't give a shit about this movie. This movie was aimed at teens. It was aimed at kids who love the gore, the boobs, the monsters. That's what... Gene Siskel was a stick-up-his-ass kind of person. He didn't care for these kinds of movies. So why would he review it in the first place? I go into it in 1984. Well, no, I can't say 84. I saw it on VHS. I didn't see it in the theater. So let's say maybe 2 years later, 3 years later, somewhere around there, I saw it for the first time. I was young. It had exactly what I wanted. And teenage me is like, ooh, naked girls. Yay. What teenage boy wouldn't be like, ah, I mean, Corey Feldman himself, his character, and even though I think he's supposed to be like 11 or something in this movie, but still, he's seeing the one girl, she's making out with Paul in the window. What is it? Is it Samantha making out with Paul or whatever? And he's watching through the window and he's jumping around like an idiot. Yeah, that's a young kid is going to do that. That's what this movie was aimed at. Young kids, teenagers. You know, as an adult, I watch it now. You know what I love about this movie? I love the nostalgia of the movie. I love those feelings that I had when I watched it for the first time. The fun I had. The laughs. This movie is fucking funny. It's why I see this one as one of the better the Friday the 13th movies, along with the other 7 parts that Paramount owns. Yes, you heard that right. I think the first 8 movies are all fun in their own way, honestly. And you're like, Jason Takes Manhattan, dude. Seriously, I don't understand it. I understand it for me, okay? I'm not going to lie. I do love me some Jason X as well. But the Paramount movies, they're some of the best. And this is one of the top of those. Friday the 13th, Part 4, Final Chapter, is a slashing 8 out of 10 for me. Is it worthy of that rating? Probably not. For me, it's an 8. Maybe I'd even go as far as to say almost a 9. Like I said, the only critique I really have about this movie, and there's some cheesy moments in this movie, I get it. I don't want reality when I watch a fucking Friday the 13th movie. So, with that being said, the only complaint I have is that, and I'll be honest with you, 10 years ago, I didn't know that footage existed. 10 years ago, this movie was a 10 for me. I find out about that footage of, you know, showing the carnage at the end of the movie. It's what knocked the 1 point off, the 2 points off. So prior to maybe 10 years ago, I loved this movie. I loved everything about it. It's what I want from a cheesy 80s slasher flick. This one is up there with A Nightmare on Elm Street, 3 Dream Warriors, the original Halloween, the original Black Christmas, Silent Night, Deadly Night. It's cheesy, it's fun, it's corny, and it's easy to return to. The rewatchability factor in this one is at the frickin' max. I don't have to wait. And it's not like, you know, so many movies these days, they try to have that twist ending where it's like, oh my God, I didn't see that coming. And then you watch it a second time to see what you didn't see the first time, and then you're like, okay, now I get it. And then after that, it starts to lose its rewatchability. You'll go back and watch it occasionally, but it's not one that you can just throw on at any time of the day and be like, I'm having fun watching this. This one, on the other hand, I can watch this any time of the day or night. What was it? The last year or the year before, the Pluto Horror Channel. For almost the whole month of June, it was June or July, every time I turned it on, a Friday the 13th movie was on, whether it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. I don't think they were showing New Blood or Jason Takes Manhattan for whatever reason. I think they had the first 6 films. And no matter which one it was, it came on, I'd watch it. I would just turn it on. Sometimes it was just for background noise. I wasn't even really watching it. I would just have it on. But That's the thing with the Friday the 13th movies. They're just fun. They're stupid. They're not. We don't have to think so hard on them. I don't understand why critics always went into these movies and then came out criticizing them for being brain fodder. Well, that it's junk. It's junk food for the brain. That's what it is. Just like this show is. It's junk food for your brain. Are you still around? You still kicking? I know it's been a long episode. Like I said, the further episodes won't be as long. It's just, I had a lot to talk about. I missed you guys. On that note, I'm going to thank you for listening. Whether there's 4 of you or 40 of you or 400 of you, it doesn't matter. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming back. For those of you who stayed subscribed while I was gone, thank you. Because your Spotify and your Apple, your Google Podcasts, Amazon, shit, CastBox, all of them, Podbean, they're all going to be notifying you. Hey, guess who came back? Yeah. So if you stayed subscribed and you get a chance to listen to this, thank you. I'm going to try to be a lot more consistent. Like I said, I have few episodes already brewing in my mind. So on social media, all right, I admit, kids, I'm not good with social media. I will try to be as consistent as possible. I can't make promises. I'm not good at replies. Ask any of my friends to message me. I'm not good at editing. Social media is not my thing. Which is weird because I do have people that will tell me, oh, I love everything you post. And it's like, oh, okay. And I didn't, and I'm not that guy. Like, there's some people that, you know, they post statuses all the time about everything they're doing. I'm not that guy. I'll tell you what movie I'm watching, but I'll do it in the stories. I'll post a video of the VHS box or the DVD or the Blu-ray or, you know, or some figure or collectible that has something to do with that movie. And then, all right, now playing, you know, and stuff like that. But I don't do social media well. I will try to be consistent, though. I will try to keep things up to date. So on Facebook, it's facebook.com/whatlurksbehindpodcast0. Facebook page is still around. Instagram at whatlurksbehindpodcast0 is still around. Twitter is dead. Goodbye. Won't miss you. Kicking your ass out the fucking door. I killed that one a long time ago, and I have no desire to go back. Such a toxic community. Ugh. And I don't get me wrong. I know there are some people that really love Twitter. They use Twitter a lot. They like the real-time feel of it all. And some people don't find it toxic. Good for you. That's awesome. I'm not going to knock you for it, but it's not my thing. Not my thing at all. I will also say the podcast can also be found on the Slasher app. Yes, I rejoined that app. Well, actually, I didn't leave it. I just stopped using it, and I thought, all right, well, I'll go back to using that. So I'll be on the Slasher app, but also on Threads, because Threads is linked to Instagram. So what you see on Instagram will be on Threads. Threads, I use it a little bit. I haven't even used it for the podcast yet at all. I've been using it for my personal profile, but yeah, Threads is, I mean, it's not bad. It's kind of cool. It's basically Twitter for Instagram, but I find it's less toxic. It's also less busy, but you'll see if you follow the podcast on Threads, you'll see the episodes posted there. So, and then there's the email, of course, whatlurksbehindpodcast0@gmail.com. I'm going to announce the next episode because there's something I completely skipped talking about this episode. And if you follow any of my personal accounts or anything like that, you know I watched this movie. And I specifically, originally when I started my notes, it was the first thing I was talking about. And then I was like, no, don't do that. Leave it for the last. Because there was a movie that I was anxiously, like, waiting for. I had heard about it last year. Late last year, I heard about it. And just hearing the buzz from it and seeing comments of people that saw it at film festivals and whatnot, and they were saying, yeah, this movie was awesome, it was great, and all this other stuff. And I was like, not to mention, I like the starring, like, the lead actor in the movie. I was like, I couldn't wait for it to come out. April 19th, boom, I got home from work. First thing I did, turned on Shudder, made sure it was there. It was there. I was like, yep. So after work, I stink, right? And I stink all the time, but I mean, I stink more after work. So I was like, take a shower, make myself half clean. Yeah, all right. Make some food. I made some chicken strips, covered that shit in mustard. And you're like, mustard? Yes, I love mustard on my chicken strips. And then I turned on Shudder and I watched, from the directors Cameron and Colin Cairns, and starring David Dastmalchian. Yes, move the fuck over, Johnny Carson, because Jack Delroy is the talk host who will take us on A Late Night with the Devil. That is next episode. Episode 141 will be a full review of Late Night with the Devil, because I have to talk about this movie. Believe it or not, I actually have seen a few negative comments about it, but not many. Not many. You won't hear much negativity from me. So if you like the movie, feel free to join me next episode where you'll hear about it. If you didn't like the movie or you haven't seen it yet, if you haven't seen it yet, make sure you watch it, because I will spoil the fuck out of it. But that's besides the point. The other thing is that you should watch it, because if not, the devil will get you in your sleep and he'll kill you. No, I'm kidding. I have no clue where that came from. It was like almost like the devil took over my body and said that. And I don't know. My name is Lily now. No, it's not. My name is Pazuzu. No, Pazuzu has nothing to do with this. This has nothing to do with The Exorcist. But Lily is a character in Late Night with the Devil. You guys have to watch it. It's awesome. It's so fucking good. I'll talk about it next episode. See, and this is why. This is specifically why I didn't talk about it earlier in the episode, because I almost want to start talking about it now, and I know I can't. Because I'm ending off with, you know, someone has something he wants to say to me. And on top of that, I'm ending this episode off with a song. I haven't done that in a long time. I was always worried about copyrights and shit like that, which I should be, but whatever. I want to end it off on a happy note with a song. A song that every time I hear it, it makes me smile. It reminds me of a certain dance. Yep, that song. Anyways, yo, buddy, where you been? Come on, dish it out.
You need to shut the fuck up!
Super!